So there are some new people today, so I'll just summarize what we have covered so far in this text. This is called Gyan Sar. Gyan Sar, or the essence of knowledge. The essence of knowledge. And it starts with a student like us, who is ignorant, who has spent his life just enjoying the world and even got some success. But then he realizes that this success is temporary, and ultimately all accomplishments in the world ultimately end in sorrow. There is never any permanent joy. So then he turns his attention that there should be something beyond this world that can give me permanent joy. And so he first turns his mind to the Lord, and he says, God is the one who is permanent. And so he worships that Lord and makes himself a servant of God and says, I am serving God and serving this world as a servant. And that is good. But then he says, there has to be something better. I need some knowledge. And so he approaches the teacher, the wise teacher, and says, I wish this highest knowledge. I have got worldly knowledge. I even have some knowledge of religion, spirituality about God. But who am I really? What is my purpose in life? Why am I here? And what is this world? And what is my relationship? So those are his questions that he asks in the book. And the teacher starts immediately by saying that whatever is known is this world. But turn your attention from known to the knower. So this world of objects, emotions, and thoughts we know as the body, mind, and intellect. I know this world. But there is somebody who knows the condition of my body, knows the condition of my mind, knows the condition of my intellect. So who is that that knows this body, knows my mind, knows my thoughts, and knows everything about this world? And that is God's presence here as Om. And that is your true nature, and that is what you really are. Each one of us, the teacher says, is that divinity. We have come from God, we are a ray of that divinity, and we are functioning in this world, but we, forgetting that, we get caught in this world thinking ourselves to be this limited body. And once he understands that, then he says, oh yes, that is my true nature. This body is an equipment, is an instrument, but really I am, we all are that divinity. We are not this limited body. This body is a equipment, just as a car is an equipment for me to get around. So this body is an equipment for me to get around. So having understood this, through who? Through the teacher. If the teacher was not there, he would have never understood that. You say, well, he could have read a book, but the book was also written by some teacher. So now what is the state of this individual, and how does this individual function in this world? It's a very, very beautiful verse, very, very practical, which we can apply in our life. It's verse number 13, those who have the book, page 42. Yadetad jagaddukha rupam purasit. Yadetat jagadukha rupam purasit tadeva dhunananda rupam hibhati tadeva dhunananda rupam hibhati ashakyam matam yat kritam yena karyam shakyam matam yat kritam yena karyam gurum tam punarvai namami namami punarvai namami namami. Says yat etat jagat. Yat etat, yat means when. This etat jagat, this world, dukha rupam purasit. Asit, in the past, earlier pura, it was a source of sorrow. So what? The world is not source of sorrow. I get joy. He says, no, it world was a source of sorrow until earlier. But having met the teacher, having got the knowledge, that same world, eva, that same world, adhuna, now, ananda rupam hi bhati. He says, now I find this world Just joy, pure joy. There is no sorrow, nothing. There is no sorrow at all. While in the earlier, everything was sorrow. Now everything is joy. Yes, everything is joy. Nothing is sorrowful for me. But how did that happen? You know, you were an ordinary, ignorant individual. How is it that, see, the world was the same. The world did not change for that person. It's not that suddenly the guru, by his magic miracle, suddenly made the whole world into Disneyland. No. The world has still the same. You know, there are still good and bad people. There are still worldly joys and sorrows. There is still sickness. There is still old age. There is still death. Yeah. So you are still joyful? Yes. The world is the same, but his attitude has changed. That is the difference. The person has changed. The world remains the same. The wife will still be the wife. The husband will still be the husband. The brother-in-law will still be the brother. So he says, how did that happen? He says, ashakyam matam yat kritam yena karyam. For me, this world, this job of changing was ashakyam, was impossible. I could not have done this. This world which was full of sorrow, now it has become a wonderful world of joy. I didn't do that. In fact, I was totally ignorant and foolish. And he says, how did that happen? Gurum tam, that guru, that teacher who changed my mind so that the same world that was giving me sorrow gives me now joy. To that guru, namami, namami. I bow down again and again, again and again, 10 times, 20 times. Never it is enough. So that guru we'll talk about today, and we'll talk about what is the change in this individual and how did that happen. So there are a few points we can cover. First of all, this world, as we said before in the beginning of the class, is never-ending sorrow. You say, why? Never-ending sorrow? You mean even cheese pizza? Yeah. Or ice cream? Or going to, you know, Hawaii? You know, those are all fun things. Yes. But the end result of whatever you do, the end result is sorrow. You know, this body which gives you so much joy. Ah, I have so much fun. What happens after a while? The joints start aching, you know, back ache, and then can't walk, and then can't see, then I need bifocals, and then I need eye surgery, then I can't hear, huh? You know, you go around. It starts giving you sorrow. Nobody wants to talk to you. They say, put on your hearing aid. Don't come. Right? They do that also. And mentally, you know, I had so much joy. I love this person. She gives me so much joy. How long does that last? You know? How long does the honeymoon last? You know? Never. Ah, I am so smart. I'm so intelligent. I know everything. I can chant all the mantras and I can solve all the calculus problems. Yeah, but then soon comes Alzheimer's, you know. And then you can't remember people's name, you don't remember where, and that same intellect which gave you so much joy gives you sorrow. And it's a never-ending sorrow. It's not a temporary. The sorrow is continuous. There is no question about it, anything, nothing. You know, the world, objects of the world, the emotions, the thoughts. And the funny thing is that when we are going through sorrow, we realize, this sorrow will never end. If I have a backache or I get a hurt, I don't know when I'll get well. You know, doctor says, or like people have a heart attack, you know, while they're having the heart attack, I'm so scared, I'm so worried. And then the people write a book. After they get well, they write a book. You know, I had a high heart attack, I had a bypass, then I had an afterlife experience. You after my bypass. Everybody should have a heart attack to experience. You know, people think that this is good. Oh, my dear, if you had watched your diet and done exercise, you could have bypassed the bypass. So sorrow is our inevitable fate of everybody. You know, there are a lot of young people, so they say, it's not true. You know, life is fun. But believe me, it will come. But a wise person, For the wise person, life is a total joy. He takes life like a game. He does not take life seriously, even when problems come. He knows his body is going to decline. The mind is going to, the intellect will. He knows that. So it's not that he does not know or he's living in a fool's paradise, you know, where he's like a madman roaming around. He knows, but he knows that this is to be expected. In fact, he thinks life is a great joke, you know, it's a great game. Somebody calls him a fool, you know, in the past. Somebody calls me a fool. This wise person calls him a fool. He would say, "What? You call me a fool?" I get upset. But afterwards he says, "You know, the fact that I am a fool, did you find out right now? Vedanta, the spirituality has told me for many years, I am a fool." He said, "Why?" He said, "Because one who thinks himself to be the body, there can be no greater fool. If you think you are this body, then you are a fool." And even somebody calls him a fool, he takes it as a great entertainment. Because in the game of life, he says there will be winners and there will be losers. People who get caught up in the game, that I have to win, I have to succeed, then those are the ones who suffer. It's not that you don't work to succeed, but if you success, it's good. If it's failure, it's also good. You dedicate all to the Lord and say, "I did my best." And his goal is something different. His goal is to wake up from this dream. And as I said, the world is in the mind. Why? Because that same individual, that same world that was giving him sorrow, now gives him joy. Why do you say that the world is in the mind? What is the explanation for that? The explanation is that, say I am a sportsman. So whom do I associate with? Sportspersons, right? I go to watch Monday night football. We go to the football games. We play basketball. So my whole world is a sportsman's world. A physician, whom does they associate with? Other physicians. They have physicians conferences and they are in the hospital and meeting other doctors and nurses. So their world is of the world of medicine. An accountant, his world is accountant. Alcoholic, whom does he is best friends with? Best friends are alcoholics. So each one of us creates our own world. And so it is the state of mind and a spiritual person, you know what they will do? They will meet in a gathering like this. So to learn about God, to learn about who I am. And so each one of us lives in that kind of world that we create of our own mind. So the world is actually in the mind. The joys and sorrows are in the mind. As long as you are fascinated with the mind, you will be affected. But once you go beyond the mind, then you say this whole world is just a play of mind. First it was giving me joy. Now it is giving me sorrow. It's okay. Let it. You know, I am not affected. So that state of wisdom where this person is always happy, whether he is successful or failure, whether he's rich or poor, whether the money comes or goes, he's okay with it. Talking about money and about church, the $1 bill and the $20 bill were talking. And so the $1 bill asked the $20 bill, "Where have you been?" $20, "I've been having a great time. I've been going to the casinos. I went to Las Vegas. I went to Atlantic City. And I went to the best resorts, and I go to the nice restaurants, and I go to the good stores." So he asked the $1 bill, "Where have you been?" He says, "I go to the Methodist church, I go to the Protestant church, Catholic church." So the $20 bill says, "Wait a minute, what's a church?" He has never... So even the money for this person has no value. He says, "Money I needed to for functioning, but to realize God, I don't need money. I can be fine without it." So he says, who gets this credit? How did this ignorant person suddenly become so wise, suddenly become so happy, the miserable person? The credit goes to the guru. He says, "I could never have done it myself. I was suffering and he took me out of that. I was down there in the dumps. he pulled me out. So what is the glory of the guru? Why should we thank the guru? Because if you think about it, now somebody, you know, put this glass of water for me, right? So even the small thing, I say thank you, you know, for bringing this glass. Somebody opens the door for you, you know, you say thank you. But somebody who has changed your whole life, how glorious must be that person who has changed me completely. That's why the word guru is broken up into gu and ru. Gu means darkness, ru means one who removes. So one who removes the darkness of ignorance is called the guru. In fact, in our scriptures, we worship guru as God. We say guru is God. Just there is a very beautiful verse. Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwaraha, Guru Sakshat Para Brahma, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. He says, I prostrate to that guru who is God himself. How is he God? You know, because in what is God? God is G-O-D. G means generator, O means organizer, and D means destroyer. So God is the one who creates us, gives us birth and created the world. God is the one who sustains the world, and at the time for us to leave, God takes us away. And that's how the whole cycle of birth and death goes on. So my creator, sustainer, and destroyer are all three are God. You know, it is God who is running this whole universe. Everything is moving because of his grace. So how is Guru the God? So they say Guru, just as God is the creator, sustainer, and destroyer. So Guru is the one who created my new personality. I was an ignorant, foolish person. He removed and he created through his knowledge, he created this new being. That's why, you know, we talk about Dvija, born again. You know, in Hinduism, even in Christianity, they say he was a born again Christian. What do we mean by born again Christian? Means he has discovered the true meaning of Christ. How Christ is so compassionate, so kind, so loving, so sharing. And a person who can practice those values of Christ can only call himself a born again Christian. Similarly, a lot of the Brahmins in India call themselves Dvija, born again. But you cannot be born again. One is, of course, we all take birth from our mother. But the second birth is when the old ego dies. The old ignorant person dies and this wise person emerges from that ashes of that ignorant person. So that is the glory of the guru. He creates our knowledge. He sustains it by ongoing education. And the third is he destroys our ego. He destroys our ignorance. He destroys our, you know, our old way of thinking. That's why the guru is worshipped as the creator, sustainer, and destroyer. And one has to have constant gratitude. As I said, somebody who just gave me, just buys me dinner, and I'm so thankful. But one who has done so much and without expecting anything, a true guru will not expect you to, give me millions of dollars. In fact, most of these the spiritual people are absolutely poor. In fact, they depend on society to take care of them. A true spiritual person is not going to have millions of dollars and a big house and all that. They just live in the church in a small room, and they depend on the folk, you know, on the people in the ministry to take care of them. Our Swamijis who also come, they come all just with a little tiny little suitcase, a tiny little bag, even when they travel for a week or 2 weeks. Why? Because they have nothing of their own. They have just two pairs of clothes, one they are wearing, third one, that's it. And, you know, maybe a computer nowadays, you know, because they do all that. Clock, and that's it. And a little, you know, a toiletry bag. And they own nothing. They expect nothing from us. And they give us this beautiful, you know, knowledge of the scriptures, like even this book that was written by Swami Tejumayananda, who is the worldwide head of the mission. Utter simplicity and modesty. If you want to see a person who is totally modest, simple, and a true saint, you have to meet him, because he's so humble. Even though he's the worldwide head, he's equal to the Pope. he just travels in the plane, just walk. I mean, he has no security, no guards, no nothing. His house in Bombay is one room. It's one room with a bathroom, that's all. And it's part of that mission. It's not even a house. Within that mission, he just occupies one room and a bathroom. And he is the worldwide head of the whole mission. So that is the kind of teachers that we deal with. And we have to have gratitude to them. And then what is the purpose of Vedanta? Vedanta is this field of knowledge which gives us the knowledge of who we are. And Vedanta says, you are that. So people say, by studying this knowledge, a doctor will become a better doctor, a mother will become a better mother, a student will become a better student. Yeah, that is true. Your ability to function in the world will improve. But that's not the main purpose. Because by becoming a doctor, from a better doctor to a doctor to a better, you still remain a doctor. From becoming a ordinary mother to a better mother, you still remain a mother. It's like you are in the rat race. And suppose you win, you still remain a rat. By winning the rat race, you have not suddenly become a mouse or become a cat or a human. You still remain a rat. So you may be the best in this world. You may be Bill Gates, or you may be Michael Johnson, or you may be, the superstar. You may be, the best actor, or, Julia Roberts, or whatever you may be. But as long as you remain in this world as a human, you will remain a human. So what they are saying is not that suddenly this person is no longer human, he doesn't have a halo, or he walks on water, or no, that's not it. What the person understands, that I used to think myself to be this ordinary human being with the limited finite qualities. But with this knowledge, I understand that the finite, the total consciousness, the God, divinity, is working through me, and I am not an ordinary individual. I am a manifestation of that divinity. That's what Christ was. That's what Buddha was. Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, all these Guru Nanak, all these great saints, Narsimha Mehta and all of them realized their infinite nature. And then when they then work in the world, then they are called prophets, because then they can influence millions of people. Christ in his lifetime, maybe a few hundred people, he talked to. He had 11, 12 disciples. But how many billion Christians throughout the world, worship Christ? How many billion Buddhists remember Buddha? So they, from ordinary finite individuals, became infinite, became unlimited, became great masters, great prophets, where the whole world remembers them. So that is the purpose of this spiritual knowledge. That is the purpose of studying these scriptures, is to wake up from the dream of this ignorant. Because right now I am in the dream of this world. Like a person in a dream, suppose somebody tells him, this world is just a dream. He's not going to believe it. But when he wakes up, then he'll realize, I was suffering so much in my dream. Why was I suffering? That was just a dream. And now suppose this wise person, having woken up, suppose you imagine that you were dreaming that you were suffering and you were a beggar in the streets and everybody was kicking you and beating you up and you were a homeless person just wandering the streets and you were so miserable. You were dreaming because you had seen a homeless person walking on your way home. But when you wake up, then I'm not a homeless person. I'm sleeping comfortably in my bed in Bakersfield. Now, supposing by some miracle, you could go back into the dream and again become that homeless person. You know that I am actually Sherry or Diana or Taylor. That is my true nature. But now I have re-entered the dream and become a homeless person, say. Will that bother you? You'll say, no, I am playing a role of the homeless person, and I'm asking people for, $2, $1, but I am actually Diana. I'm sleeping in my bed. Then that person will treat that dream also as a joke. So that is the glory of the wise person. You and I are still lost in the dream, but he or she, that wise person, having woken up to that reality, they could just stay in their joy and be happy. You know, Christ could have just stayed in his state of bliss, but he chose to walk in the world and try to waken the rest of us up. And in the process, he was persecuted, he was crucified. He knew that, but he did that out of compassion for the rest of us. So these wise people come back into the world. Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of the mission, was in the Himalayas sitting with his guru, and he had already realized the truth. And his guru said, you know, you can now stay here, and whoever comes, you can teach them. He said, no, I'm not going to stay in the Himalayas. I want to go down to the country, to go down to India, go down to the people who are in ignorance, and I want to tell them what is the truth. And the teacher said, people won't recognize you, people will ridicule you, people will laugh at you. He said, doesn't matter. I have woken up and I want to wake everybody up. So that is the glory of the guru. Even though we don't appreciate him or we don't respect them or we don't serve them, that they help us out of compassion. So this beautiful verse basically tells us that life as we see it is sorrow. Through the right knowledge, you can experience joy and see the world as a game. The world will not change, but your mind will change. And you have to always be grateful to the glorious guru who woke us up from this joy of ignorance. It's a very practical, very beautiful verse. I think we can apply that, you know, directly in our life from tomorrow. Don't take things too seriously. Life is a game. It's a joke. It's not too serious. Does not mean that you don't work hard, but don't get too caught up in that. Remember that there is a higher goal or higher purpose in life. So any questions or comments?
Okay, now for 20 minutes ago, everything that you have given up, the bad habits, you could resume them.
Right. Very true. Yeah. God, if I live, I'll never do this. I'll never do. Yeah. It's a very good one.
I'm like, how do you do it? I would hate to have your job. Like, she just complains to him, mm-hmm. and then he softens it for us. And he was like, I just, you know, I'm really grateful for my life. You know, the little things, like we have a bed to sleep in, and.
See, that's a wise person.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to have a white, you know, white priest's habit or doesn't have to have orange clothes. You know, he's wise wherever he is. And these are the kind of people that we have to learn from and see them, see the wisdom in their attitude. That's beautiful. It's very nice. Thank you. You should emulate that. Copy him. Yeah. You know, become like
him. I try. Like, right. I feel like I bring the mood up in the office because I'm really like, but I just make fun of them because they're all bitter.
Good.
Okay, yeah. Hey, my job. There was something that I hated.
Yeah, I think there are two things. One, you said, like you said, be grateful. At least I have a job. I could be on the welfare, welfare line, standing at the unemployment office, you know, with so many people unemployed. And secondly, as you said, you know, do your best, and then whatever happens, what you can control, you control. Mm-hmm. What you can't, you know, leave that, you know. And so do your job, and if everybody else is unhappy, let them be. So I think doing that, no, you're right, you're good. And one should be a source of, be a giver, not a taker.
And then when you're in a better mood, like, everything else happens better. Right. You know, if you're in a bad mood, then just stuff happens,
True. There's movie The Secret. It attracts you. You create your own world. If you are happy, Swami Chinmayananda always says, the spiritual seeker has no right to be pessimistic. He should always be optimistic. Because if you are pessimistic, say, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. Things are going to be bad. I hope I don't get cancer. If you keep thinking that, it will happen. But you say, I'm fine. Everything is good. Everything. And once you are optimistic, then you attract those kind of people. In fact, you create the circumstances. People who are unhappy will remain unhappy, and they will create unhappiness around them. So you are responsible for your own world, nobody else's. That's why they say the world is in the mind. It's not outside. So the kind of mind you have, that kind of world you will create. Very good.
The law of attraction.
Yes, yes. No, that movie Secret, everybody should watch because that's what it says. And that's very good. Thank you. Yeah, but we are saying that the world is sorrow if you let it. But if you become a wise person, then that same world will give you joy. So what I meant was not as a pessimistic, but a person who is totally caught up in the world will be fully sorrowful. But once you wake up and once you realize that there is a joy outside, so as long as you are in the mind, you will be depressed. And you will take pills. But if you start meditating and wake up that I am that joyful being, that's what happens when you start meditating. I don't know if you have been regularly for how long, but as your meditation becomes better and becomes deeper and as your mind becomes quiet, what you experience is waves of joy arising from within, unexplained. Early in the morning, you're sitting, you're not, you know, nothing, no reason. So the more you meditate and the more you go inward and the more you quieten your mind, not with drugs, not with alcohol, not with pills, not with Prozac, not with... But if you can quieten your mind through the chanting of the name of the Lord, through meditation, through watching your breath, through prayer and service, then you will find that your mind will automatically become joyful. And then the depression will no longer have a hold on you. So to get out of depression is not by switching pills or not by switching psychiatrists, but by switching the way you approach your depression. In fact, there are people who have been coming to this class who were on multiple pills taking for psychiatric pills and have been able to go off. So that is the secret. Pills are not a solution. Pills are just, it's like heroin. It's just a drug you are taking. It's not solving anything. And I, at least in my practice, try to take people off psychiatric medicines as much as I can. And I think I have been successful, at least in a few people. Even narcotics, you know, strong, heavy-duty pain pills. A lot of people I have been able to, who were totally, totally addicted to these OxyContin and, you know, Norco and Vicodin, through talking and through meditation, we have been able to help them. So it does help. So don't, it's like, you know, you can use a stick to walk, but once, if you're able to walk on your own, then why would you need the stick? So that medicine is a stick. You have to learn to walk on your own.
I just get mad at my doctor.
Don't take it. Yeah, you don't have to take it. That's good. Yeah, just you don't need it. Right. Because see, for them it is easy. You know, you write a pill and then that's it. You're gone. Then you come back in 3 months. And sometimes they are too busy. Yeah, take it like a vitamin. Some people think it's very easy. But for you, it's like you are constantly under the influence of this drug. You're like a zombie. You may or may not realize it. Today there was a lady I talked to and she takes tremendous amounts of narcotics and she said, my stomach is hurting. I said, because the narcotics are not allowing your stomach to move and you're all the time bloated. She said, what am I supposed to do? How can I do? I said, well, then you came to me for a diagnosis. She said, I want a diagnosis. I said, the diagnosis is you're taking too many pills. If you keep on taking pills, your stomach will hurt. I've done all the tests. There is nothing else wrong. The point is that we get dependent on these medicines. And I talked to her literally almost an hour. I talked, you know, but she didn't want to listen. So what, you know, you can't help everybody every time. And maybe in a few days she may realize what is the truth.
Quiet my mind, try to, and it's really been helping. So.
Very good. Yeah, see, very nice. That's a great story. That's very good. Yeah, it works. You know, I personally, you know, not that I've had any major problems, but from the time I've started meditating to now, I do feel a change in my attitude, how I approach the world, how I deal with people. You know, I feel an inner calmness, even in, otherwise our job is so stressful and, you know, we are so busy. Sometimes you have complications, patients don't do well, patients die. But through meditation, you can find it's like a, port, you know, where it, in the storm your ship is wandering, and then suddenly you find a lighthouse and it guides you safely, and that is, I think, spirituality and meditation.